You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
Is there a prophecy in the Bible about the magicians from the Exodus? You know, the ones who opposed Moses in the court of Pharaoh. Yep, those guys. Today, we're going to be looking at a hidden prophecy about them, about the future, in 2 Timothy 3 that describes a great end-time confrontation that's going to take place. An end-time battle, so to speak, of spiritual nature. And I'm pretty sure most of you are not aware of this prophecy. This is Bible teacher Nelson Walters, and that's why a lot of you tell us that you follow this channel, because you learn stuff here that you just don't get elsewhere. Today, we're going to explore the prophecy. Who will fulfill the role of these magicians in the future? Who it is that battles with them? When this takes place? And the massive takeaway for believers that we need to apply in our lives so that we can be better prepared for what's coming. First, before we look at the future magicians, what is the context of this prophecy? 2 Timothy 3 is a chapter, you know, most don't really routinely look at for clues about the future, but it is full of prophecy. The chapter starts like this. This, know also, that in the last days, perilous times will come. 2 Timothy 3:1. The Greek word translated perilous means savage, violent, or harsh, as applies to humans. It was used in Matthew 8 to describe the demon-possessed man known as Legion. Sometimes in the Bible, last days can refer to, you know, the entire final 2,000 years from the resurrection. But in this case, when referred to demon-possessed people, it takes on a much more ominous meaning. Perhaps the tribulation period, the 70th week of Daniel, or at least the tribulation with the run-up before it. I would say it might be the latter, and we have probably entered this time period. After this, the Apostle Paul describes these people who act like demon-possessed men from Matthew 8. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure, rather than lovers of God, holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. Avoid men such as these. Paul then launches in to his prophecy about the magicians of the Exodus. This is the part that people are just missing. Just as Jannes and Jambres oppose Moses, so these men also oppose the truth. Men of depraved mind, rejected in regard to the faith. But they will not make further progress, for their folly will be obvious to all, just as Jannes and Jambres' folly was also. 2 Timothy 3, 8-9. In this passage, the Apostle Paul is talking about spiritual leaders in the future that will go astray at the end of the age and who will promise things which are diametrically opposed to the teaching of the Word of God. And what's most interesting is he compares these future men to magicians, evil enchanters. So this passage really takes on a supernatural aspect, because this is real magic, not some kind of trick or illusion. And, you know, maybe that's why you don't hear about this very much in your churches. So if we're going to figure out the future, we first need to look at the past and look at those magicians and who they were In the Exodus account, these magicians enter the picture when Moses and Aaron appeared before Pharaoh. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did as the Lord commanded. Aaron cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, also did the same by their secret arts. For each man cast down his staff, and they became serpents. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Still, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. Exodus 7:10-13. Okay, turning a staff into a living serpent isn't some parlor trick. Aaron turned his into a serpent by the power of God, and the magicians by the power of Satan. So these magicians were demonically empowered, something we need to keep in mind for the prophetic aspect we're going to get to about the 2 Timothy 3 passage. What is very interesting that you need to know about staffs in ancient Egypt was the Waz scepter. You know, that Pharaoh held as a symbol of his power. It looked a lot like a serpent with a long, straight staff, a forked tail, and then a crest on its head. Why was that? Let's look into it. The Egyptian word Waz meant power or dominion. The Waz scepter appeared in relics, art, hieroglyphics, and was associated with ancient Egyptian religion. And it was associated with ancient Egyptian deities like Set and Anubis, as well as with the pharaoh. So here's the million-dollar question. Did the magicians also hold these same Waz scepters? Interesting question, isn't it? Because if they did, perhaps it was a regular practice for these magicians to turn these scepters that look like serpents into real serpents. So is that why the Waz scepter looked like a serpent? Did Egyptians have some kind of yearly ceremony to demonstrate to the common people the power of the demonic that was behind the throne? And if so, was the Waz scepter shaped like a serpent to remind the onlookers of the demonic power that could turn it into a real serpent? We're supposing this. We're considering it. But maybe. It actually seems very logical. I'm surprised no other biblical scholar has ever postulated this idea. So when Aaron threw down his staff, and it was probably just a plain piece of wood, on the ground and turned it into a serpent, it was likely Pharaoh said to himself, "Hey, I know this enchantment," and summoned his magicians to copy it. Otherwise, he would have been embarrassed if they couldn't. And of course, the magicians did. But of course, the power of the true God was greater than the false fallen angel gods who empowered the magicians, and God's power and his staff ate the power staffs of the magicians for lunch. And as you see, this passage identifies Pharaoh's magicians by name, Jannes and Jambres. These names aren't found in the Old Testament. Pharaoh's magicians are nameless there. So how did Paul know the names of the magicians? Well, Paul was a student of a Jewish Pharisee leader, Gamaliel, before Paul became a Christian. And so he knew a lot of the Jewish oral tradition and then some non-canonical books also of the Jews. Plus, when he wrote 2 Timothy at the end of his life, he had a very special advantage. He had the Holy Spirit instructing and guiding him. So because it's in the Bible, we can know the names Jannes and Jambres are accurate. Where'd they come from? One of these non-canonical books is the Apocryphon of Jannes and Jambres, with an M, not a J. It's an account of a legendary ancient Egyptian magician purportedly written by one of Pharaoh's officials. Is this where Paul got his information? Well, maybe, maybe not. But an interesting aspect of that book is it says Jannes and Jambres were Moses' teacher when he was younger and lived in the royal household as a son of Pharaoh's daughter. If this is true, and it could be, then they knew Moses. And they could have taught him the enchantments that they used, like turning a staff into a snake. A big surprise, though, I imagine, came when their wise scepters were eaten by Aaron's. Now, the next event in the Bible where the magicians appear is the first plague, where Moses turned the Nile to blood, and the magicians were able to turn water into blood as well, which hardened Pharaoh's heart. He says, yeah, my magicians can do that. Again, he figured this was just more of what magicians could do. Then came the plague of frogs, and again, the magicians were able to copy what Moses did. However, I want you to notice something. Although they copied Moses, they were adding further damage to the nation of Egypt. They caused plagues, plague of blood and the plague of frogs, but they didn't undo them, they worsened them. Was this why God permitted this power? Well, maybe. So the turning of the scepter into a snake and the two plagues were things Moses had likely been taught back in his time in Egypt. At least that's our guess. Perhaps that is why God chose these things to start the plagues with. So when the rest of the plagues happened and the magicians were unable to copy them, it was more impressive to Pharaoh and the people of Egypt that the demonic powers had met their match. It was at this point, at the third plague, the plague of lice, the magicians were unable to duplicate what Moses and Aaron did. And they said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. But Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord said, Exodus 8:19. Later, at the sixth plague, the plague of boils, the magicians themselves got boils and could not stand before Moses and Aaron. From this, we see that even though the magicians had met their match back at the third plague and were totally ineffective from that point on, they still stood before Pharaoh when Moses appeared. I guess, you know, just in case, maybe they could do something like Moses did. Now, one question I've always wondered is why didn't Pharaoh try to kill Moses from him doing all these plagues? I mean, he was crushing the nation. Why not just take him out? Reading the Apocryphon of Jonas and Mambres, it appears Pharaoh did try by delegating the job to his magicians. The magicians, therefore, set to work. They took some of the hairs and garments of Moses and made an image of him and laid it up in a tomb. Kind of sounds like voodoo, doesn't it? And set evil demons against it. Immediately the demons came and the princes of them. Satan was ready with all his hosts, all of them, in diverse forms to destroy Moses. They ran against him in a troop. But when they lifted up their eyes to the holy prophet and saw him encompassed by a host of angels, like it once was with Elisha, they could not bear the look of him, much less attack him, and altogether they fled away in confusion with cries and howlings. That was from the Apocryphon. One final note about the magicians is that the Apocryphon says Jonas, who is the lead magician, died in the Red Sea when God closed the sea on them. So, even though it's non-canonical, and perhaps not completely true, some of it might be because the biblical record doesn't refute these things. Okay, so if we combine all this knowledge from the Bible and these ideas from the Apocryphon, what future prophetic events might this foreshadow? Let's summarize what we learned from the past. We have two men who are depraved and evil, performing miracles that are demonically empowered. They are challenging two men sent from God who are bringing God-empowered plagues to the earth. What does that sound like to you? To me, it sounds like the Antichrist and false prophet opposing the two witnesses of Revelation 11. The two witnesses, who the Bible tells us, could bring every plague upon the earth. And based on the Exodus saga, we know the Antichrist and false prophet will attempt to copy God's witnesses. But 2 Timothy 3:9 tells us this attempt will fail. But they will not make further progress, for their folly will be obvious to all, just as Jonas and Jambres' folly was also. So, there's going to be a supernatural showdown in the end times between the two men of evil and God's two witnesses. Prior to that, however, we need to realize that demonically empowered men will perform supernatural signs. This is the big takeaway for believers. We aren't sure exactly when this starts in relation to the rapture, but I'd have to imagine that it is prior to the rapture and a major source of the falling away. Both Matthew 24:24 and 2 Thessalonians 2:9-10 discuss people choosing to follow these demonically empowered men because of the miracles that they're seeing happen. So believers should anticipate seeing these things and rejecting the ones doing these signs. We need to walk by faith, not by sight, not by what we see.
Thanks for listening to Bible Prophecy Daily. We hope you learned something valuable today. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode.